coming up on NHL Fantasy on Ice. A little reflection on the Game 7 wins for the Sharks and Bruins, and a lot of looking ahead to each second-round matchup. Plus, key trends to know, DFS players to target, and the tallest jerk of them all hops on the line. It's NHL Fantasy on Ice.
Pete and Rob back with you here on this Wednesday morning, breaking down the second round in the Stanley Cup playoffs, fresh off two epic Game 7s, Rob, on Tuesday night.
Yeah, pretty incredible stuff. And how could we not start off by saying credit to San Jose for coming back from a 3-0 deficit. And then Vegas tied the game. They went into overtime. Sharks prevailed. So once again, the Stanley Cup playoffs prove just about anything can happen.
And a ridiculous momentum swing came after that Cody Eakin penalty. Joe Pavelski left the game, did not return. That's something that looms large moving forward. But as of right now, the Sharks have to take a deep breath, get some rest, and get ready for their game one later in the week. They're now playing the Colorado Avalanche, a team not many people expected to be there. But this is going to be a nice little clash in the second round.
It will be a great clash. And I think we could talk at length about that Game 7 in particular, how many crazy things happened. We could even talk about Game 6, where Vegas had a chance to close out the series on home ice. They didn't get the job done. I think there's a million and one possibilities here that we could dissect. But to move forward, I really look at two things. Number one, every single season, there's a team in the Stanley Cup playoffs that overcomes these great things in whether it's round one, round two, whatever it is. I think last year we saw it with this Cup winners, the Capitals, that double OT by goal by Lars Eller swung the whole series for them, and that was kind of the building block. Then it was Kuznetsov in round two against Pittsburgh. So I think that Sharks win against Vegas, Pete, was kind of their statement game in the first round. And now against Colorado, you mentioned it, the injury concern to Pavelski, their captain, that could be looming large, but I think if they overcame that 3-goal deficit with 10 minutes left to go in the game, I really think they can overcome anything.
The leader, I mean, I can't help but look at this locker room and say there's something special there. There is quite a bit of heart in this locker room with how they I mean, Vegas, you know, the penalty call went against them, but they allowed 4 power play goals in a 5-minute major. Mm-hmm. That the Sharks deserve a ton of credit from that, everything else aside. And then Vegas tied the game, right? So in the final minute, epic fashion. So, and they had a chance to win it in overtime, blew a 3-1 series lead. So a lot, I think Vegas is going to come back stronger from this if we look ahead to next year. But of course, the Sharks with Thornton, Couture, I mean, Couture, what a game for him. This is a guy that has led the playoffs in scoring before in 2016, and someone you have, I think, in fantasy have to look differently at for the rest of the postseason.
Absolutely, and another player on top of that is Kevin LeBanc. He seems to be this new power play quarterback for them, so anytime he's on the ice in a man-up situation, that's a guy you got to keep your eye on. But my first thought in fantasy or general hockey is always going to be, do we trust Martin Jones yet?
I do, based on right, how much bigger could he have come up in the past 3 games, right? 2 home wins, but absolutely stole the Game 6. That ripped Vegas's hearts out. And then, you know, the team rallied. The team can overcome anything at this point if they overcame what they just did. Sure, it coincided with the return of Vlasic in Game 5, the return of Joe Thornton in Game 5. But when this team is healthy, they can go the whole way. We both liked them at the beginning of the season, and I think after staying up late and, you know, getting pushed to the limit, we believe in the Sharks once again.
Yeah, I do too, Pete. And I do think the Avalanche, you know, their first round was impressive against Calgary. Their top line, as they had been all season, they were firing on all cylinders. But what was unique about their win over Calgary, they were able to get some differentiation with Rantanen on the second line as opposed to having MacKinnon and Landeskog together on the top line. So that's a storyline I look at to see San Jose. I know Erik Karlsson was great offensively in round one. Brent Burns was great offensively in round one, but defensively is a different story. So to me, I'm going to be paying close attention to what that Rantanen line on the second line, they might be able to get some weak matchups there, and Rantanen might be able to explode for that Avalanche team.
We saw it at so many different points in the first round against Vegas. When the opponent gets odd man rushes, and if Vlasic isn't on the ice, this team's vulnerable, right? Karlsson had a bunch of assists in the series, better than an assist per game, but you know, he was on the ice for a ton of goals against, and with Nathan MacKinnon running around, and especially if they can, I think that's such a key though, because the Avalanche we've looked at this whole year as a one-line team. If they could spread it out to two, they have a chance in this series. A one-line team is not going to beat the Sharks, nor would they have beaten the Vegas Golden Knights, I think.
And their sleeper in the first round, Cale Makar, is now an X factor for the Avalanche. It's a pretty good problem to have at this time of year.
It is.
When you have a rookie defenseman come in, score his first goal in the NHL playoffs in his season debut, and then all of a sudden the next game he's playing 20 minutes per game. So that integration was semi-seamless as far as I'm concerned. And if the Sharks are minus one forward in Joe Pavelski to start the series, which could be a possibility, you know, that's going to be an interesting matchup to see if the Avalanche can take advantage of maybe having a weaker Sharks forward group. Maybe they can get some better assignments there and lead with Tyson Barrie and Cale Makar on defense.
I still like, even if Pavelski's out, I think they have the reinforcements to get this thing done, and their depth would still hold true over the Avalanche over a seven-game series. I love what I saw from Timo Meier in that game. You mentioned Kevin LeBanc has been doing it on the power play all season long, but Timo Meier had 10 shots on goal in Game 7, and a number of those were really quality chances late in the game and early in the game that could have swung things. Timo Meier could have had a hat trick, I thought, after the first period.
He had that breakaway against Fleury, and Fleury stoned him. I mean, Fleury came up huge in that game too. So if for any critics out there of Marc-Andre Fleury in a Game 7, I'm just not buying into that.
Yeah, I mean, this is a team collapse, I think, for the Golden Knights. Some things broke against them, missed opportunities. I wouldn't blame it just on Marc-Andre Fleury either.
As deep as the Sharks are offensively, I would like to look at the Avs too with a little bit more depth now. Colin Wilson's a guy that's emerged in the first round, even late in the season. He was playing on the top power play, really kind of underrated player. Also off the ice, I read he's into like some super meditations and stuff. So guys like that that you read about in the papers for those obscure kind of reasons, they always seem to have that added gear, that clutch gene mentality. So I would look for Colin Wilson in your fantasy drafts or your DFS lineups as a guy that could maybe get a goal or two in a late game situation.
Colin Wilson, I believe, when he was with the Predators, scored some big playoff goals as well. So that's a great sleeper for round two for the Avalanche. Also, JT Compher, I think, stepped up in both of those comeback wins against the Flames for Colorado, scored one of the goals in each leading up to the when MacKinnon took over in game two and Rantanen took over in game four. So, yeah, some of those guys have been stepping up in a big way on the depth scoring front for Colorado, which gives them a glimmer of hope, I think. But I am still picking the Sharks in this series. I have trust in their overall lineup. I even have trust in their defensemen. As long as Vlasic is healthy, I think they have more firepower with Carlson and Burns.
One more guy for the Avalanche we should keep an eye on is Philip Grubauer. It was one of the better storylines in the stretch run of the regular season. He delivered a clutch performance again in round one against the Calgary Flames. I expect good quality goaltending from him in this series against the Sharks. The only caveat I would say there is that this Avalanche team didn't go through a lot of adversity against the Flames. I think they got a lot of the good breaks, a lot of the late game goals. The difference is when those don't go your way, you've got to find a way to bounce back for them. So if the Sharks get an early lead in the series, I have confidence they're going to close it out. I'm standing by my preseason pick. I'm going Sharks here.
Yeah, the Avalanche will need to take one of the first two games to work. I think they have faced some adversity this season, though. I just keep thinking back to that stretch, right, where they were a bottom five team in the league from late November to about March. So they've overcome a lot. I think the series will go six, but I'm picking the Sharks as well.
And then we should also get into the other Game 7. Unfortunately for the Leafs, Pete, same story, different year.
They came up empty in a big spot once again against the Boston Bruins, who have now, I think, won six straight playoff series against them, including three Game 7s since 2013. So
wow.
Maybe they have to go back to the drawing board, reassess some things. But the aspect of the Bruins that showed me something over the course of the series, especially late, was their secondary and third line scoring. Even the fourth line in Game 7, guys like Sean Corrali, that goal from Marcus Johansson, right? We've been pumping him up for a few months now since he was playing great with the Devils. He scores a huge goal off a turnover by Jake Gardner, and the rest is history.
I'll stoke your fire there, Pete. David Krejci was a guy that led their team in ice time in Game 7. So as a second-line center, if he's leading your forward group with Brad Marchand, Patrice Bergeron, David Pastrnak, and company, if you've got a guy in Krejci leading your team in ice time like that, huge news. Also, on the back end, Zdeno Chara led the defense corps in ice time two, second to Brandon Carlos. So those are two guys there that kind of fly under the radar, but they're logging big minutes and they're taking away big dogs against the Maple Leafs like Tavares and Matthews and company.
And Tuukka Rask was sharp. Remember the days where we were saying Yaroslav Halak was just as good? Would he ever get some usage here in the playoffs? Tuukka Rask, who did not have a great Game 7 track record, was extremely sharp in that game. He weathered the storm in the second period where Toronto came on really strong and limited the damage and got his team over the hump.
So Boston will be back at it on Thursday night against the Columbus Blue Jackets, who it seems like we haven't seen them play a game in close to a month now in playoff time, right? So that series to me, this is really Boston's series to lose. They proved that they were the top dog against the Toronto Maple Leafs. And the way that I look at this is Boston had to face a very hard opponent in round one. I'm not saying that the Tampa Bay Lightning for the Blue Jackets wasn't a hard opponent, but there wasn't a lot to overcome in that series besides the first game, three-goal deficit that they overcame. There wasn't a lot else going on there for Columbus. Meanwhile, Boston had to fight this thing through a tough series against a high-scoring team in the Maple Leafs. I really feel like Boston's going to take this thing home.
I think that Columbus's rest could hurt them here. I know there are different circumstances with each of these teams. The Sharks are another team that hit their stride at the right time of year, but they're riding off that momentum. Columbus had its best four-game stretch maybe since the trade deadline and now have been sitting around. So I think Boston has the advantage on paper and also in terms of momentum. And just think of it from a big picture, right? It was almost a foregone conclusion that Boston would meet Tampa Bay in the second round. That's not happening. So all of a sudden, I think that ups the ante for Boston. I love their resiliency over the last couple of games of this series to come back from the dead and take down the Leafs, who were the better team for most of that series.
And they also found a way to play physically against Mitch Marner. They took him out of the series besides the first two games. So that was one of the adjustments that Bruce Cassidy and co. were able to make. But then for Columbus, I do have to give some appreciation to them too. Their third line and their heavy forwards, in no particular order, Boone Jenner, Nick Foligno, Josh Anderson, those are guys that you saw in round one. How valuable heavy forwards that can score are. Those are guys I'd be looking at in the second round to say, okay, if Columbus is going to do this thing and put another big upset on the table for the National Hockey League, it's going to be led by those guys playing around 15 minutes per game.
Well, the Bruins, like I said, are a four-line team, so the Jackets have to be a four-line team as well. That goes for Oliver Bjorkstrand. He needs to continue to chip in goals and power play points. Same with Alexander Texier, who was playing late in that series on a power play unit with Seth Jones. If they can have Seth Jones and him working in coordination on a separate unit from their Panarins and their Werenskis, who had a huge series as well. And Pierre-Luc Dubois needs to have a better series. I think he needs to produce better than a point per game in this upcoming series just to offset what the Bruins have going on with Bergeron and Krejci.
Now, let me throw out a hypothetical. Let's say Columbus repeats what they did in round one by winning the first two games. Do you think that would get the people in Boston to maybe start harping on the Yaroslav Halak train?
Probably, yeah. But I don't think they're going to win the first two games in Boston. It's interesting how these seedings are right now, right? The Bruins are the highest seed. The Capitals might lose. The Islanders might be the second highest seed. So I think that I like the Bruins in the series. It's probably going to go at least five or six. It's going to be a tight series throughout. There are probably going to be some momentum swings again. But I think that the Bruins will take care of business at least one of the first two at home and probably stick with Rask for the rest of the series.
The Blue Jackets do have the luxury of quote-unquote having nothing to play for. There's really no pressure on them. They've already overcome that one elusive series win. They did it already against the best team in the NHL. So I will just say, you know, if Columbus does this thing again, don't be surprised by this. They've got a guy like Seth Jones playing close to 30 minutes per game on the blue line. They have Zach Werenski, who took his game to a new level in round one, playing around 25 minutes per game. They've got guys like Savard that are chipping in these beautiful goals against the Tampa Bay Lightning. So there is a special thing going on there in Columbus, and it is hard to play against John Tortorella in the playoffs, no matter what you want to say. He's got guys buying in, blocking shots, making the right adjustments. So I'm excited for this series.
What's your pulse on Sergei Bobrovsky? Because this was a guy that probably is coming off his best playoff series of his career, but has never been able to sustain it even to that extent. So can he sustain it over multiple series against an equally formidable opponent, I think, in the Boston Bruins compared to the Lightning?
Yes, he can. And I think he proved that to himself, the most important to prove it to, in round one. And Artemi Panarin, right alongside with him, had a great series. You saw the famous picture of them after the Game 4 win. That's legendary stuff right there. And that might be one of those little low-key moments in the playoffs we look back to and say, that's some good camaraderie right there. That looks like a team that's buying in on all cylinders right now.
And I was looking, the season series, usually you take the season series with a grain of salt, but these teams met three times from early March to the end of the regular season. So some familiarity. Mm-hmm. Remember that game where it was 7-4 Blue Jackets they won? So they can hang with the Bruins offense. If this gets high scoring as a series, which team do you think it favors? Does it favor the Rask side or the Bobrovsky side?
That's a great question, but when I think of high scoring, my first thought would be Brad Marchand and David Pasternak, so it would definitely favor the Boston Bruins.
I agree. I think that Columbus, if it comes down to the goalie battle, low scoring games, maybe Bobrovsky would have the edge, but you don't want to get into the 3-4 point games, right, of the Marchands and the Pasternaks, and especially if Pasternak's on a separate line, if they're all producing multi-point games, you're probably going to drop the series.
A series that will have two great goaltenders going head to head: the Dallas Stars versus the St. Louis Blues, Jordan Binnington versus Ben Bishop.
Ben Bishop has the edge right now. I mean, there are a lot of things I like about the St. Louis Blues. I'm picking the Blues to win this series like I picked them in round one. I originally picked them to get to the conference final, and what I saw and how they slayed the Winnipeg Jets, who are probably a more explosive roster in terms of talent than them, I'm a believer in the St. Louis Blues. But Ben Bishop can change that, right? When Ben Bishop is healthy, few goalies are more efficient, few goalies are more clutch, even in some of those games. There was, what, game two against the Predators where the shots were lopsided? I thought, there were still there were a lot of quality chances for Nashville in that game, and Bishop kept his team alive.
The hot goalie is definitely the team that you don't want to face in any round of any playoffs. But I will say, this series beyond the goaltenders, I'm looking at both second lines. Number one for St. Louis, Jaden Schwartz, emerged, scored tons of goals against the Jets in late game scenarios. He pretty much won them their last game single-handedly. And then the second line for the Stars, though, Matt Zuccarello, Rupe Hintz, and Dickinson, they stepped up big time against Nashville too. So these two second lines might be the key to winning this series. Whichever one scores more, my gut's telling me they're walking into the third round.
I like the St. Louis Blues second line as long as Braden Schenn's playing there. I was looking, he didn't have any points, had only like three shots over the first four games of the series, was moved to the line, second line center from left wing, to play with Schwartz and Oscar Sundquist, who I know you like as a sleeper, Sundquist, but his production from the tail end of game five to the end of game six, Schenn had 3 points, seven shots, Schwartz had four goals. So if that line's working it, they're going to be a really difficult team to beat. And Zuccarello needs to be more of a distributor, not just a goal scorer here.
And it's crazy, we haven't even talked about the Stars, like the star players, not the team, but the star players in this series. We have Vlad Tarasenko, who was relatively quiet, but he did pepper a ton of shots in round one. And then for the Stars, we obviously saw Alexander Radulov just take over his former team, the Nashville Predators. Jamie Benn had a class series. Tyler Seguin does what he always does. So I'm excited to see this like top lines each go at it as well.
And the Stars came out for Dallas, extending to John Klingberg, who was a point per game player in the series. Alexander Radulov had some big performances from games 4 through 6, where Dallas really took command in the series. So yeah, Dallas has an advantage in terms of their top line productivity from round one, their goaltender, and also maybe their home ice advantage, right? I kind of like the vibes going on in Dallas a little bit more compared to St. Louis, who dropped a couple of home games in the first round.
I'm with you. They've got Ezekiel Elliott out there from the Dallas Cowboys. Dak Prescott's in the stands. The crowd was going nuts for those games. A very good place to spectate a game, but I do think the Blues will have a nice counter to that top line with their good trio of defensemen. Their first 3D is pretty stacked, and even Jay Bouwmeester really rose to the occasion in the playoffs, so I think they have the right counters for it. But to me, this series, Dallas has something special going on. Their top line is too good. It could go head-to-head against any top line in the NHL, and I would still put my money on Alexander Radulov and company. So I'm thinking Dallas in this series. Just my gut feeling, not a preseason pick or anything, but just what I've seen with them since Ben Bishop's been healthy. Even when he's been out of the lineup, this Dallas team wins. So and that says a lot right there.
It's a toss-up, man, this series. You even look at their defense, right? You mentioned a couple of guys. Pietrangelo played great in round one. Miro Heiskanen was outstanding, being a rookie shouldering 24, 25 minutes a game. So we're in for a real treat here in the Central Division, which was wide open. And, of course, we see the top two seeds go down in the first round.
We're still waiting for the last series to be official. Until then, we have a Game 7 between Carolina and Washington. I cannot wait for this game, although I don't know how many more Game 7s I can take. They're too stressful as a casual hockey fan to watch.
It's definitely been a marvel to watch these Game 7s, and this is a great way to cap it off. There is a real possibility, I think, that the Hurricanes can win this game based on how they played the first two games in Washington, and how crazy would it be if each of the number one seeds in each bracket fell in the first round, which is what would happen if Washington goes down.
Hashtag only in the NHL. Now, that scenario, though, I think Carolina did play, to your point, two quality games, first two games at home in D.C. That being said, we have yet to see the Capitals play a 60-minute effort. It's a little frustrating to watch because they show flashes of brilliance, they show flashes of dominance, but then they'll sit back, they'll get a little lazy, and they'll just kind of walk through it slowly. I'm sick and tired of seeing that. I want to see that team play their full potential like we all know they can. Turn back to last year. You don't have to flip too far to see that. Instead of playing last 10 minutes to go in the third period with a good effort, they've got to play 60 minutes. This Canes team is quality. I think the Caps get it done if they play 60.
And they may only need to play 40, right? This is like we were waiting for the 60-minute effort from the Sharks. They've showed it up. They had the urgency because they were playing a really strong opponent. I mean, the Hurricanes are more of a sneaky opponent. They don't always make you pay. That's the problem. And that's why the Caps have been able to get away with it to this point.
A couple players we like in Game 7, kind of under the radar, guys. First player, center Lars Eller for the Washington Capitals. Big-time playoff producer last season. And like what we saw last night, the OT winner by Goudreau for the San Jose Sharks, it's always kind of that player that flies under the radar seemingly in these Game 7s that gets a big goal.
Eller has a chance to make an impact here. I think that the second line for the Capitals may need some tinkering. We've seen Carl Hagelin, who has a lot of experience in Game 7s. He's 8-1, his teams are, in his career, but doesn't have many points in those games. He might make an impact if he's playing with Evgeny Kuznetsov, but that's not a line that has been producing at a ridiculous level since it was formed after Oshie's injury in Game 4. So maybe Eller steps up in some capacity, whether it be at even strength or on the power play, and I like that logic. I mean, he came through in a huge way for last year when the Capitals were shorthanded.
And if you like Carolina, I would look at their blue line. It's ripe with guys you could put in your DFS lineup, but the safest pick to me would be Slavin. He's playing around 25 minutes per game. You get even strength exposure to almost every line. So whether it's Warren Fogle getting these chippy third line goals, it's Mr. Game 7 Justin Williams scoring on the second line, or it's Sebastian Aho scoring on the first line, you get that all in one with Slavin. He's pretty priced. He's priced cheaply in DFS, I should say. So that would be my guy there to really be a safety pick.
6 assists in 6 games for Slavin, 6 points in 6 games for Fogle, who leads all rookies in playoff scoring. But to me, if you're running out a DFS lineup and you don't have Justin Williams in there, the GOAT of Game 7s, he actually has the most Game 7 points in NHL history, 14 in 8 games, almost 2 per game. You look across the league, all these superstars are less than a point per game in Game 7s, yet Justin Williams, whether he's been with the Hurricanes, the LA Kings, the Capitals, or now the Hurricanes again, has done it time and time again.
That is a great stat. And now we finally got on the same page schedule-wise. We welcome in perhaps the tallest jerk of them all, tennis star John Isner. John, Game 7 game day, what's the pulse?
I'm just trying to kill time today. Of course, I'm home right now, just doing some rehab and whatnot. I'm just killing as much time as I possibly can before 6:30 Central hit.
Well, the home team in this series has won every game. So does that worry you at all about this Canes team, or do you think they've shown the resiliency to get this thing done and knock off the defending champs?
I mean, it's certainly a little bit worrisome. I mean, winning in Washington is tough, you know, anytime, whether it's in regular season or, of course, in the playoffs, and especially tough tonight, but it's certainly doable. I mean, in my opinion, the Washington got all the pressure off of them last year, of course, and they won a Game 7 on their way to the Stanley Cup. They used to have a lot of haunting memories from Game 7 in years past, but look, I still think the pressure is firmly on Washington, and Carolina's certainly going to play much better than they did in Game 5. So I think this is going to be a very, very tight game.
What about Game 7 heroes, Justin Williams versus Carl Hagelin?
I know. Well, that's right. I mean, Justin's got the moniker Mr. Game 7, and he certainly came up clutch in Game 6. So this is going to be a huge game for him personally. Of course, he's back with Carolina, and he's going up against one of his former teams. He's got a lot of buddies on that team as well, so there's a lot of interesting angles in this game tonight. But look, he's going to be ready. Team ready. So Coach Brendan Moore, he's the one that's really responsible for a lot of this. Boys are going to be ready, no doubt.
And one of the big storylines is definitely whether or not Michael Ferland and or Andrei Svechnikov will return for this game. As a fan of the team, is this something that you're hoping for? Obviously with the Svechnikov injury, it's a young player that has a very, very bright future. Maybe there's some risk involved in throwing him into the lineup in this game, but what's your stance on that situation?
Yeah, well, certainly it'd be huge to have both of them back. I mean, we all saw video of Svech skating in that yellow jersey the last 4 or 5 days or so. Seems like he's progressed pretty well so far. But of course, it seems like Carolina is being very, very cautious with this. This is something that you can't mess around with, a concussion for a young player like this, for a guy who realistically is going to be one of the best players on the Hurricanes for many years to come. So you got to be careful with that. But if he passes all the protocols, he'll probably play, but we'll see what happens. I guess no one knows right now. I do think it'll be a big boost for the team to get back out there.
Let's say they do get those guys back and they squeeze out the win tonight in Game 7. What do you think they have a good chance against the Islanders, who have been sitting, waiting around for their second round to start?
I think so. I mean, I think whoever wins this Game 7 tonight is going to have a very good chance against the Islanders. Having that rest is certainly a good thing, but it's also a double-edged sword in my opinion, because I know that from tennis. Sometimes, I've been waiting around for my opponent to get to me. And sometimes being a little bit tired but confident is a lot better than kind of been waiting around for a long time. So I think these guys are incredible athletes and they train so hard. I think whoever wins this Game 7, whether it's Carolina or Washington, is going to have a very good shot against the Isles.
All right, John. Well, thank you for joining us and enjoy the Game 7 tonight.
All right. Thanks, fella. Thanks for having me on.
John Isner, pro tennis player, Hurricanes fanatic, fantasy hockey player all through and through all season long. And he was at game number 4 riling up the Hurricanes crowd. He played a part in them evening up the series, and then they went back there for Game 6 and forced Game 7. So you got to give this team a ton of credit. It's a young team, right, the Carolina Hurricanes, and they have come through against the defending champs and made it a little interesting here.
One of those two teams will face the New York Islanders in the second round, again with the same theme as Columbus here. It feels like we haven't seen the Islanders play in how long, but that being said, I'm excited for whichever second round matchup it's going to be. We finally get to see Barry Trotz behind the bench again, Matt Barzal going at it, and Robin Lehner between the pipes.
I picked the Capitals. You picked the Capitals to win it all. I picked them to go to the conference final. That said, the Islanders proved something to me, that Barry Trotz is an absolute mastermind, and I love what he did in a couple of different facets in the first round. Jordan Eberle playing him on the top power play on the first line with Matthew Barzal, had the playoff series of his life. That was a great adjustment. Power play 1, Devon Taves quarterbacking that unit, not Pulak, not Nick Leddy, who was terrible in that situation during the regular season. Plus, he has the familiarity if they face the Capitals, so that's a big X factor in this series.
Well, let's not get that far ahead of ourselves, but the one thing that John Isner said about teams or athletes that have to wait long stretches of time to play their next game, if my notes are correct, he used the term double-edged sword, being you think it's a good thing, but it's actually a bad thing, and also said tired but competitive when describing teams or players that are in the thick of things, that are playing every other night. I kind of like that logic. To me, whether it's Carolina or it's Washington, Both of those teams have come back from adversity in the series. They've both been down. They've both looked down and out. They've bounced back. They've shaken it off. They've learned how to ride the wave of the Stanley Cup playoffs. To me, the Islanders, they made light work out of the Pittsburgh Penguins. Big credit to the Islanders. Nobody saw that coming. Not one person saw that coming, Pete. But that's what scares me. They had an easy first round. Neither can be said about Caps or Carolina.
I really wonder about the Islanders. I know it's been smooth sailing so far for Robin Leonard, but remember, Thomas Greiss was just as good in the regular season. I feel like if they play the Capitals, maybe at some point they'll lose two in a row, and there could be a very real opportunity for Thomas Greiss to step in here. Full credit to Robin Leonard, full marks, but it's just the reality of the situation. I don't think that Trotz would hesitate to make that move.
That being said, the Islanders have a great thing going, and having Thomas Greiss as your backup goalie is a good problem to have. So even if they do get in that said scenario where they drop two games potentially and then have to go to Greiss, that could be a big momentum swing and could swing the whole series in their favor. So that's one of those, what I would coin as a champagne problem, if you will, moving forward.
And I was looking at, so Johnny Boychuk's out for 3 to 4 weeks, which you think Johnny Boychuk has been a big producer for this team or a big presence on the defensive front, but he actually averaged the fewest minutes of any Islanders defenseman in the first round, which makes me think that Thomas Hickey, if he steps in, I mean, he was probably their best defenseman last year when everything went off the rails, Thomas Hickey. So he's more than viable, and I don't really see that derailing the Islanders. I mean, if it comes down to it, maybe the Caps or the Hurricanes will have more offensive talent than the Islanders if they end up winning the series. But I like the four-line play. I like the depth in goalie, and I like Thomas Hickey replacing Johnny Boychuk.
I like that analysis, and I think it to go a little bit further on that too, Devon Taves on the back end, Ryan Pulock on the back end, those are sure-handed guys that really, in any situation, they can get a goal or they can make a great back check the other way. So Trotz has a lot of those wild card or aces to work with in his favor, and the one sleeper I have for the Islanders would be a guy in the second line, Tom Kunackel. He got, what was it, 2 goals disallowed in that game?
In the first game.
And he had 2 assists in the first round as well. He's skating on a very underrated second line. And we saw it in the playoffs last year, too. He rang a couple posts for the Pittsburgh Penguins. He was playing there. I think this guy just has a knack for elevating his game when the opportunity arises.
And Brock Nelson's another guy that goes hand-in-hand with Kunackel. They were together on the second line. Josh Bailey also there as well. So that second line is going to have to match up with either the Jordan Staal line or the Kuznetsov line, which is going to be a tough assignment either way. So Nelson's going to have to keep it going. Eberle's going to have to keep it going. Those young defensemen are going to have to continue to emerge, which they've done over the course of the whole season.
Well, we're looking forward to the second round. And if you've had a good time on the program thus far, remember, it's free to subscribe on iTunes. Also free, Pete, to leave a 5-star review.
And remember, check out the other podcasts in the NHL Podcast Network. NHL Executive Suite is bringing on Jim Rutherford, GM of the Pittsburgh Penguins, this week, and also NHL Draft Class with Adam Kimmelman and Mike Morial. New episode this week as the draft is coming up in the very near future. So for Rob Reese, Pete Jensen, enjoy Game 7 of the Hurricanes and Capitals. Enjoy the second round. Hit us up with last-minute questions, and thanks so much for listening to NHL Fantasy on Ice.